The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
There are many international issues that the presidency of Donald Trump will affect, as we've discussed in the past week, but one major conflict on his desk is the Russia-Ukraine war. Now, we heard on Friday that he said Zelensky was no angel in an interview. And despite his campaign promise of ending the war in 24 hours after taking office, that war, of course, is still going on. What effect will the Trump presidency have on the ongoing war in Ukraine, on NATO, and indeed on Europe in general? Well, we're joined now by Lara Marlow, journalist and author of How Good It Is, I Have No Fear of Dying, Lieutenant Yulia Mikitenko's Fight for Ukraine. Lara, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
First of all, Trump, I mean, he will have an effect. The question is, how quickly?
I think people expect something fairly quickly because he and Putin spent all last week sort of bandying, you know, back and forth, chiding each other and saying, well, we must get together, we must talk, and telling journalists this. Trump, for probably the first time ever, was actually critical of Putin. He said that Putin was destroying his country and that he must stop this ridiculous war. In all in capital letters on his Truth Social post, he said, it's only going to get worse. So it appears likely that they will meet soon. The problem is that the Ukrainians and the Europeans do not look likely to be represented or to participate in this negotiation at all. And there's a great danger that Trump and Putin will sew up Ukraine just on their own and do whatever they want to. And Trump earlier this month expressed understanding for Putin's refusal to allow Ukraine to join NATO. Zelensky is adamant that he cannot accept any kind of agreement unless there are security guarantees. Because if they just freeze the lines where they are, what is to keep Russia from going for more territory later after they've regained their strength? And the greatest danger is probably that Putin will try to control internal politics in Ukraine. He wants to subjugate Ukraine. I mean, just on Friday, an oligarch called Konstantin Malofiev, who's very, very close to Putin, said, we must achieve victory, which will eliminate the Ukrainian state as such. And Putin still does not recognize Ukraine as an independent state. And Trump, during his first term, actually said, he just parroted Putin's rhetoric that there is no such thing as Ukraine. Ukraine doesn't really exist as a state. To which my Ukrainian friends say, well, then why was he not able to have his victory parade in 3 days in Kyiv? They have proven through the last 3 years that they do exist as a state.
The notion that the two would get together, Putin and Trump, and as the president's office in Kyiv said, Putin wants to negotiate the fate of Europe without Europe and talk about Ukraine without Ukraine.
Exactly. And that is the danger. You know what Trump is like. He wants to do it all on his own. During what they call the Normandy process, when Angela Merkel and François Hollande were trying to negotiate a settlement during the 2010s, they had a slogan which was nothing about Ukraine without Ukraine, because the Ukrainians have always been afraid of this sort of superpower condominium. And that was Biden's slogan as well. But I doubt Trump will respect that. The other danger with Trump is that he did this in North Korea, in Afghanistan, when he negotiated with the Taliban. He puts the pressure on and he says, sign, sign, sign. He wants an agreement. He wants positive publicity. But then the thing falls apart. And he's shown over the last week that he has a very poor command of detail. For example, he praised the Soviets, well, actually called them the Russians, in the Second World War. He said they helped us win the Second World War. They lost 60 million people. And 60 million was actually the total losses in the whole Second World War for all countries combined. The total Russian losses was probably between 5 and 6 million. When he was talking about casualties in the war, he said over 1 million Russians have been killed. And actually, nobody knows the exact number. It's probably around 200,000. He said 700,000 Ukrainian soldiers have been killed. And the real figure is more like 80,000 to 100,000. Mm. So he's very sloppy with the details. And it's kind of hard to believe that he's going to negotiate a settlement that will pay attention to questions like armament, security guarantees, and so on. So there's a combination of sort of optimism or hope that at last there is going to be some kind of movement, because the Ukrainians felt very let down by Joe Biden, who really just wanted to keep the war going but didn't want to give them enough to let them win. So they're glad that stasis appears to be ending, but they don't really trust Trump.
No, he says, "I'm going to do Russia, whose economy is failing, and President Putin a very big favor. Settle now, stop this ridiculous war. It's only going to get worse if we don't make a deal." And he says, "If you don't do it, well, then I'm no choice but to put high levels of taxes, tariffs, and sanctions on anything being sold by Russia to the United States." Does he not know they've already maxed out on that?
Yeah, and also Russia gets around the sanctions by using a phantom fleet to sell its petrol. The Russia exports practically nothing to the U.S. I think there's a little bit of platinum and a little bit of fertilizer. So sanctions and tariffs are not going to scare Vladimir Putin. But that's tariffs are, of course, Trump's answer to every problem.
Now, his other solution is to get OPEC to produce much more oil, therefore dropping the world price of oil, dropping the income that will accrue to Russia on foot of its sales to various countries who are still happy to buy Russian energy. And therefore, Putin's income goes down and he won't be able to afford to prosecute the war. What about that for logic?
Well, that's the theory. He also, his drill, baby, drill slogan in the U.S., by increasing U.S. production, he also wants to help to drive the price down. Putin responded to this. He said that low oil prices are bad for both countries, for the U.S. and for Russia. And Trump has obviously been getting intelligence on the Russian economy, which until now has been overheated because of the war. And the government was very keen to keep inflation officially under 10%. But economists say it's like 20% inflation. There's a severe labor shortage because so many men are fighting. So Putin will face economic difficulties. Trump is right about that. But the experts say that it won't be enough to make him back down, at least not for the next year or two. I think Putin is probably waiting to see what Trump is going to offer. It's reported that they want to talk about more than just Ukraine. They want some kind of grand deal. They want to resume arms control talks. And Putin could probably trade some territory in Ukraine for being allowed to keep more nuclear weapons, something like that. So it could get very complicated and very messy. But Putin will be thinking, should I accept a ceasefire with the idea, knowing I can go back for more later, or should I just hold out? And Trump will get bored and he'll abandon Ukraine anyway. The Americans, by the way, have cut all aid to Ukraine and everywhere else except Israel and Egypt for the next 90 days. So he can just wager that Trump isn't going to support Ukraine anyway. So he just may as well go for it all.
Now, what about European leadership? We know that, you know, Macron has been wounded by electoral events. Olaf Scholz facing an election in Germany with the rise of Alternative für Deutschland. And who are the movers and shakers now? Are we left with Ursula von der Leyen, who's the head of an economic, not a military bloc?
I was at a lecture last night by the former French ambassador to Washington, and he was saying the three biggest powers in Europe, although Britain is no longer in the EU, but Britain, Germany, and France are all in very deep political crises. The German economic model, which was based on cheap energy and exports to China, is failing. Scholz is out, as we know. The German election on the 23rd of February is obviously very, very important. Now, it's the CDU, the conservative Christian Democrats, who are leading in the polls in Germany, and they are very pro-Ukraine. They are the most pro-Ukraine. They want to give more weapons, perhaps the Taurus missiles that Scholz refused to give them. And they, if they did a coalition with the Greens in Germany, the Greens are also very poor, very pro-Ukraine. So that would certainly be the best outcome from Ukraine's point of view. Macron has been holding consultations the last two or three days with Kaja Kallas, the EU's foreign affairs representative. And also Ursula von der Leyen is seeing him in the Élysée. I believe it's today. So there may be something going on in the background, but I don't really have much faith in the EU's ability to pull it together and to find a united stand and to impose European will in negotiations over Ukraine. It really looks like Putin and Trump want to go it alone, just the two of them, just the old boys.
Now, what about Zelensky himself? I mean, he is facing opposition from within his own country. His popularity has fallen, but he is not facing elections because the country is at war. But there are people who are already coveting his job.
Yes, that's true. But the Ukrainians I talk to say that they want to maintain unity for as long as the war is on. And Zelensky, unlike Putin and unlike Netanyahu, is not in the position where he wants to perpetuate the war so that he can stay in power. That's not the problem in Ukraine. It may very well be that when the war ends or when the fighting stops, that there is a presidential election and he is voted out of office. That could happen. Trump said this last week that Zelensky was responsible, partly responsible for the war. Now, what he meant was that Zelensky should have capitulated, should have negotiated something immediately with Putin. But the Ukrainians believe he's partly responsible because he didn't prepare the country when the Americans and the British were saying the Russians are massing troops, they're about to invade. Zelensky was saying, no, they're not. In fact, we're going to have picnics at Easter. And that became a meme. All the Ukrainians remember that he said that.
We also remember the lies of Sergei Lavrov the night before they went in, denying that they would go in. So
yes. But Ukrainians ought to know better than to believe Russians. I mean, you know, they've been at war for 11 years now.
Now, what do you make of the role of General Kellogg, who's Trump's special envoy to Ukraine? He's saying it won't, the end of the war won't happen in a day. It can't. Perhaps 100 days.
Which is already 100 times longer than Trump said it would take. He said he could do it in 24 hours. General Kellogg was supposed to go to Kyiv early this month, and he canceled his trip or postponed his trip indefinitely. If you count 100 days, the first 100 days of Trump's term will take us to the end of April. I don't think anybody believes that there will actually be a ceasefire, an end to the war, a negotiated settlement by the end of April. But the Ukrainian military certainly hopes they will have some indication of how long this is going to last and what sort of form it will take. I suspect that the Trump administration will just try to freeze all the lines where they are. Nobody thinks anymore that the Ukrainians will get back the 20% of their country, which the Russians have taken, at least not in the near term. So the real question is, will there be any security guarantees that go along with a ceasefire or a negotiated settlement?
It's a very, very difficult time, hard to predict what is going to happen. And the question of Russia's continuing strength, I presume it will keep throwing North Koreans and Russians at this thing until somebody calls a halt.
Yeah, the North Koreans are a huge source of manpower for the Russians. They have 1.2 million men in their army. It's one of the biggest armies in the world. And they've also been sending, there was a big tank shipment the other day. They're sending artillery. They're really arming the Russians. And, you know, that's a huge resource for the Russians. The Americans say that about a third of the 11,000 who were initially sent have been killed or wounded already. And that by April, you know, half of them will be gone. So There are more North Korean troops expected. They're fighting only, as far as we know, only in Kursk, which is inside Russia, of course, until now. But that is certainly a big help to the Russians. And the Ukrainians are saying, well, if Putin can have North Korean troops in Russia, why can't we have European troops in Ukraine? And they think, you know, that would be a security guarantee for them. Zelensky is asking for 200,000 European peacekeepers. He won't get that many. That's more than participated in the D-Day landings. Advisors to Zelensky say privately that they think 40 or 50,000 European troops would be enough. Then the difficulty is getting the governments to agree to that.
Lara Marlow, thank you very much for joining us on the line.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.